Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton. You can find him at Misto Christofo. I know Chris wasn't with me yesterday to bring you the rapid recap on the Jaguars hiring John DeFilippo as their offensive coordinator, but I can tell you that he was excited just like I was about, 26, 27 hours later, and we're still pretty pumped up about this. So great. It truly is great news for the Jaguars offense. And with that, we're going to be talking a little bit about what they could be doing going forward with the quarterback position, considering ties to DeFilippo. And we'll go ahead and get that started right now. But Chris, you didn't get to really say much about it yesterday on air as you were at work while I did the rapid recap pod, but give me a quick rundown on why you were pumped about the DeFilippo hiring.
Well, I mean, he was my number one OC candidate going into this offseason. What he did with Wentz and Foles in Philadelphia, but mainly Wentz, was something that definitely kind of shot him up head coaching trees and ladders and such like that. Didn't get a head coaching job this past year, went over to Minnesota. Ended up getting canned through the season, which I don't think it was really his fault. I think it was just kind of a disagreement between how he wanted to run the offense versus how management wanted to run the offense. So he gets fired and then comes over here for another OC gig that could help him in his head coaching career if he does turn this offense around, whether that will be maybe in Jacksonville, maybe he gets promoted from within if Marone doesn't do well. Obviously that's all foreshadowing if something doesn't work, but pretty pumped for it. You know, nothing like seeing the timeline talk about the same thing for the last 48 hours or so.
And I guess this is just kind of a theory, but DeFilippo, like you said, it was kind of like a miscommunication almost and a clashing of opinions in Minnesota with what they wanted to do with the offense, which didn't make sense considering how they went about their offseason, how they paid Kirk Cousins. Like, with the weapons they had around Kirk and the money they gave Kirk, you have to pass the ball. Like, more than you, that's what you dedicated yourself to. And Zimmer obviously took that over and didn't seem to like that idea. But Jacksonville may not really have a choice when it comes to what they want to do on offense, because it's so clear that the quarterback position held them back. This offseason so clearly is showing that it's going to be centered around the passing game. Otherwise, all of these guys are going to be out of a job. So if DeFilippo comes in and, you know, he's got a strong sense of urgency of wanting to fix the passing game, these guys, like, whether it's their philosophy or not to run the ball, might be forced to, you know, agree with DeFilippo's philosophy. That's why they hired him, to fix this passing game and save their own jobs.
Yeah, I mean, I think DeFilippo was signed or hired for the sole purpose of, I think the Jags are really going to kind of turn the corner. I think they're going, I'm not going to say they're going to abandon the run game, but I think they're going to have a much different philosophy compared to what they went into this past year wanting to do. Smash mouth, run the football. I think they're going to try catching up. Was it Marone that made the comment about how the four teams that are still in the playoffs are there because they all have one common factor? It's their passing offenses. And I think it's very apparent. I think the Jaguars offense, I think, is going to attempt to turn the corner and join the new wave of offenses in the NFL. Because, I mean, I've been making the joke since we got Leonard Fournette that they're running a 70s offense in 2018 and now 2019. And I think the Jaguars are going to try emulating that. And they got probably one of the best guys available to do that, especially when you're trying to find your next franchise quarterback as well. So DeFilippo makes all the sense if they're planning on using him the way he should be used.
And that's why we, unlike some Jaguars fans, the skeptical ones who believe in running the ball, are so excited, because not only are we locked on Jaguars, we are locked on fixing the Jaguars passing game. So that's why we love the DeFilippo hiring. But with the DeFilippo hiring comes the next question. What are they going to do at the quarterback position? And everyone loves to point at Nick Foles. And I get that. There's a connection there. Doug Marone specifically said that Nick Foles had absolutely zero to do with the hiring. He said, if I'm recalling correctly, Nick Foles wasn't even a part of the conversation when they interviewed DeFilippo for the job. And he said that the interview went about 6 hours. That's how each interview went. They brought in plans about quarterbacks and the offense and stuff like that. Nick Foles was never mentioned. So I'm so curious as to, I mean, is the thinking with Nick Foles being a potential Jaguar strictly because everyone like wants to put the two together that he won the Super Bowl MVP? Because there's a lot of factors that point to it's not going to be as easy as everyone thinks other than that simple DeFilippo Foles connection.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is you're not going to talk about a guy like Nick Foles. I mean, you're going to talk about him in an interview, but also Doug and all these guys know that you still got to hold your cards to your chest until this guy's your guy. They're not going to go into these meetings and be like, oh yeah, we're getting you because we're going to want to draft Dwayne Haskins and sign Nick Foles. Like, you're not going to throw your cards on the table, because obviously if DeFilippo didn't work out, you just gave somebody that has, you know, can go to any team in the NFL if he wanted to and give information on you, which I know that's not the sole reason, but that's something that you have to factor in as to why these things aren't talked about. But yeah, I think that's just people trying to connect dots to really just kind of make themselves feel good. They see John DeFilippo, they see that he was with Nick Foles. At this point, it's just a really big coincidence. Now, that doesn't mean that it's out of the running that they could get Foles, because now you have basically an expert scout on Nick Foles. DeFilippo can tell you what Nick Foles is, what he thinks of Foles, everything in and out. But the biggest thing for Nick Foles is that he is with a team that he seems to fit really well, and he's with a damn good head coach in Doug Peterson. That's the biggest thing right there, is Doug Peterson right now, I think, is the sole reason to Nick Foles' success, because where was this Nick Foles his last three stops? He kind of flashed when he was drafted in Philly. I believe that's when he was with Philly. He had that 7-touchdown game, but didn't really do anything in Philly. Ended up going to St. Louis and then to Kansas City and then now back to Philly. So obviously the guys flashed in the past because teams were just handing out first-round picks to get him. He would start a few games here or there, would kind of shine, would kind of sputter, and then this past year, or last season, won a Super Bowl with Philadelphia, looked like the guy, started the first three games of this year, where it was kind of meh, came back at the end of this year, when Carson Wentz gets hurt, leads the Eagles to a playoff push, and was maybe one dropped pass into an interception away from advancing to a second straight NFC championship game. So there's a lot of intrigue with Nick Foles, but there's also a lot of, I think, things that have just lined up the right way for him as well. So that's just one thing people really have to factor into, is it Nick Foles that's succeeding right now? Because he looks shaky against Chicago at times, or is it the system that's succeeding with Nick Foles right now?
And one thing that everyone needs to think about with Nick Foles, because people assume it's going to be so easy, just trade for him or sign him as a free agent. Well, one way or another, he's going to be expensive. I can't remember correctly, but there was a report that came out that teams were offering twos to Philly for Nick Foles last year, and I don't believe they took obviously they didn't take the offer, but I believe that's what the report was. So in terms of trading picks for him, he's not going to be that cheap. And I mean, you're also looking at what you're getting, like Chris said, like he's been, you know, a star sometimes and he sputtered at other times. He's not some complete package, great quarterback that you're willing to trade a bunch of assets for. Or if as a free agent, we're just going to make an assumption now because we don't know exactly what he'll want. But his option in Philadelphia, if they were to pick it up, is worth $20.6 million right now. Let's assume that's his bar for what he wants to sign in free agency. So Jacksonville offers him that. Well, not only do they have to pay him that $20.6 million, they also are still on the books for Bortles' deal. That's at bare minimum $9.5 million. So you're putting $30.1 million on the 2019 cap table for an average starting quarterback. You know, he's proven that he could be a star sometimes. He's proven that he could sputter at sometimes. You don't know exactly what you're going to get with him in different systems, in different places, in different roles, as well as the money dedicated to Bortles. And the most important part of all that is, despite the idea that they can definitely shed a lot of cap space this upcoming offseason with releasing certain guys, restructuring certain guys, as things stand right now, the Jaguars are in the red. They are in negative cap space projected for the 2019 cap table. They can find a way to afford it and be able to do nothing else. They wouldn't be able to pay Ramsey on Foles' deal immediately or Ngakoue or sign a free agent like a receiver in Golden Tate or any other free agents they might want to go after. It's going to be incredibly complicated. Unless Foles comes in and says, you know what, like my family has a ton of money, which they do. His dad's like a millionaire of some sort, and he were to be like, I'll take a cheap deal of $10 million a year, then yeah, we're talking that it could be a lot more realistic. But this is the NFL. Like, most guys aren't willing to just take that friendly, you know, discount, especially when they're going to be considered top-tier free agents. And I don't think you could just assume Nick Foles will be willing to do that. So a lot of money would have to be sent Nick Foles' way, if not assets to Philadelphia for him. It's not that simple.
And taking a discount for a team that he probably legitimately has like almost zero ties to or any like reason to take a discount. It's not like we're in a situation where Foles has been here his entire career and we're asking him to come back for one more year on the cheap. We're a team that's trying to contend for a Super Bowl that he has never played for, and we have one relevant piece that he can identify with in Filippo that would lure him here. So we have no bargaining power whatsoever over here. So Foles is going to go to the top bidder, or if there's a place that he's comfortable with, might take a little bit less money, but not almost half of what he's expected to earn with Philadelphia if they were to exercise his option and he also exercise his end and stays with Philly.
While Nick Foles certainly could be an option for Jacksonville, Chris and I have one that could end up being a bit better in terms of finances and mentoring, I guess is the best way to put it. Option for the Jaguars quarterback position coming up after this break. What if I told you that 39-year-old, almost 40-year-old Josh McCown should be the guy that the Jaguars signed as a quarterback in the 2019 offseason just a couple of months ago, Chris? What would you have said? Just in a vacuum.
In a vacuum? Who I would take?
Just me. Just if I came up to you and said the Jags should look into Josh McCown this offseason before the DeFilippo hiring or anything like that, what would you have said?
Honestly, I would have, for the right price, I would have been for it. I liked Josh McCown last year as kind of a, you know, veteran, at least in a backup role, because he performed well for the Jets. He broke his arm or something like that before getting hurt and missing the rest of the year. He was playing actually pretty decent football. So I honestly probably wouldn't have fought you too hard on it. But, I mean,
that question didn't go the way I thought it would. I thought you'd have called me crazy. But I know a lot of people will call us crazy in a vacuum. But at this point, there's definitely a connection to McCown like there is with Foles. In which case, like I said, he's 39, almost 40. Like, he could have retired a long time ago. But In his mid to late 30s, he's seen some success as a quarterback, especially in the mentor backup role, spot starter type of role. He's come in and he's played decently well. He's been in the NFL for, I think, 16 years now, so he has a ton of experience that he can offer young quarterbacks. And I mentioned the DeFilippo connection. In 2015, for the Cleveland Browns, Josh McCown put up second to third career numbers in passing touchdowns. In only 8 games, he threw 12. That was the second most of his career up to that point. I think third most passing yards in 2,109, and second highest completion percentage in more than like a 2 or 3 game stretch at 63.7%. He put up really good numbers in the system with DeFilippo, and you have to remember, his main target was a 30-year-old tight end, Gary Barnage, who had never had over 250 receiving yards before that and never did after. So that was his main target. His number two target was a slot receiver in Travis Benjamin. His third target was a backup running back who was used as a utility receiver in Duke Johnson. So it's not like he had some great supporting cast. The team went 1-7. But the only positive on that team at that point seemed to be Josh McCown at 36 years old, looking like a legitimate starting NFL quarterback under DeFilippo. So I wouldn't vouch for him to come in and be the starter by any means, but him as a veteran presence for a rookie, as a guy that, you know, maybe could start the season if you really want him to, or at absolute minimum, bring him in as that backup that has the ability to start, but also mentoring a young quarterback that you draft this upcoming offseason. I think he's a perfect fit, especially because I don't think he'd be that expensive.
Yeah, I mean, he might have like a very small market for backup quarterbacks, but like you said, if you want him, all you have to do is offer him like a few more mil per year, and you could probably get him over people. So that's the big positive, is he is kind of the cheap old guy in the system to get. Plus, I mean, you would be filling in the McCown book. You already had Luke on the team at one point in this franchise's history, so now you'll have Josh. So you'll have both of them.
I thought about that earlier too. And he made $10 million for the Jets last year, which was actually a little bit more than I figured, but the year before he made $6 million. He played his way into that with 18 touchdowns and I forget how many passing yards, starting for the Jets in 2017. I don't think he would be taking on $10 million as a free agent signing elsewhere, especially as a backup. But that right there is half the price of what we were thinking about for Nick Foles, and I think that automatically makes it even more realistic.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's going to be just the biggest thing, because like all of this, I'm trying to think of a way to say this. The biggest issue that the Jags have in this offseason that we're not necessarily used to is this whole cap thing, which I know everybody on the timelines, oh, cap's fake news or whatever, but it is. This is not a good year for the Jaguars to not have a just Brinks truck full of cap that they can just throw at any free agent they want. So they're going to have to play some money ball. And Josh McCown might be the best bet in this game of money ball for what they're trying to do. Especially if they get a guy like Josh McCown, you can almost bet that they're taking a quarterback in the first round. The higher tier, the player that they get in free agency, I think the lower the round that they're going to draft a guy.
And if you remember a couple of years ago, and keep this in mind, the Chicago Bears, as far as I know, are still pretty good when it comes to the cap space. I know they definitely were this past off season. They paid a guy in Mike Glennon a good contract, like $16 million or something like that, and traded up, albeit it was a small jump, but they sent away assets just to make sure that they could go up and get their franchise quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky like a month after signing Glennon. So would you rather spend hypothetically $18 million in the quarterback room on Josh McCown and Blake Bortles combined and trade a couple assets away to get your franchise quarterback? Or would you rather spend $30+ million to have Nick Foles and Blake Bortles as the guys consuming your cap space in the quarterback room?
I mean, I've been all for trading for a quarterback if you think they're the right guy. I mean, with this not being a very deep quarterback class, you're likely going to have to jump New York anyways if you want to get your guy. So if that meant getting Josh McCown and then trading up for a guy, that's the best bet, because like I said, people kind of want to trash the term windows in the NFL, but the Jags team, as each year goes on, will probably get progressively worse. And last year was probably your highest chance that you'll probably get to winning this thing. But I want to say that you're probably next season and the season after that is probably your window. After that, if you haven't made any progress or you haven't, you know, reloaded the roster or found your quarterback yet, then it's probably done. You're going to be set back another 5 or 6 years until you can reload it. So if that means at this point, I've been very adamant about this. Good teams get the quarterback that they want by any means. So if that means having to trade the farm to get one, be my guess. But you better be trading the farm and getting the right guy, because the last thing you need is to trade the farm, get the wrong guy, and then now you're now set back both in the quarterback position and future draft classes where you could have tried to help yourself again. So I'm all for them, whatever it takes to get the guy that they want, as long as it's the right guy.
I definitely agree. They need to hit on the quarterback position this offseason, both for the short term and for the long term. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the Senior Bowl once again. We're going to be breaking down the South team offense, much like we broke down the North team just the other day. Some guys that we like there as we get ready to head to Mobile. That trip is coming in just a couple of days. All right, so Chris, I know you're excited for the Senior Bowl just as much as I am. We're counting down like the hours, the minutes, the seconds until we head out there. And with that, we're going to go ahead and start breaking down the South team's offense. We broke down the North team the other day, position by position on the offense, with some guys that we liked, some guys that Jaguars fans are definitely going to want to keep their eyes on. So let's go ahead and look at the South team quarterbacks. And these graphics that I am reading off of from Jim Nagy, the director of the Senior Bowl, you know, some of them might be a little bit dated. They were posted in the past week, but there are updates coming to the roster every day. Like just today, I believe there was a utility player from Memphis added to the roster. So if I miss out on some guys, just tag along with me. These should be like 99% correct. But we're going to look at the South team quarterbacks to start. Adding in Tyree Jackson, who was added the other day to this South team roster for the quarterbacks. You also have Will Greer. You have Gardner Minshew, Jared Stidham, and Clayton Thorson. Greer out of West Virginia, Minshew out of Washington State, Stidham out of Auburn, and Thorson out of Northwestern. Thorson, any connection there?
Absolutely not.
No, he's kind of bad. I'm guessing your guy here is going to be Greer, right?
Yeah, he's really the only guy of value, I think, from this South class. Everybody else is kind of like, they're probably going to be taken a little earlier than they should, and it's just going to be for pure upside. But Tyree Jackson might be the other guy, but even then, I still think he has his flaws as well. So I was kind of surprised because he declared for the draft. He said he was going back to school, then went into the transfer portal, and then decided to declare anyway. So I'm not sure what happened with him. I don't know if the advisory board told him to come out or if he was not getting any interest in the transfer portal. But Will Greer for the South team is pretty much a lock for me.
I'm going to have my eyes on Greer a lot, and I view him a lot less than you do. I think he's going to end up being like my QB4, which my Twitter thread is going to be going up soon with the clips that I posted about the other day. I kind of got sidetracked by the whole offensive coordinator news, kind of derailed any thought of me getting that thing up, but that'll be coming soon. Chris also did a breakdown on Greer that you guys can check out at LockedOnJaguars.com. But so not to steal your thunder and taking Greer, I think my eyes will be on Jackson. I view him like Josh Allen in a sense that they're similar in what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are. But at the same time, like, don't let that make you think that I view him as a top 10 guy, because I viewed Josh Allen as a round 3 to day 3 guy last year. I did not understand why he was getting such high value for the type of project that he was going to be. And that's where I view Jackson the same way. Like late day 2 pick to early day 3 is probably that range with the attributes that he does bring, as well as the thing that he needed to clean up. If not, Gardner Minshew is a guy that really started to flash at Washington State as a grad transfer there. He's going to be really fun to watch because he comes from an air raid system, so have to see exactly how he picks up this 49ers style of offense that Kyle Shanahan will be calling. Now on to the running backs. We have Bruce Anderson out of North Dakota State for the South team, Ryquell Armstead, he comes out of Temple, LJ Scott out of Michigan State, and Trayvon Wesco, who's a kind of running back fullback mix coming from West Virginia. Chris, who you got here?
Most of these names are fake names. I literally only know LJ Scott.
I was gonna say LJ Scott only because I've been referred to him a bit that he kind of fell back under the radar after what was supposed to be a good year for him at Michigan State. But I've got a buddy who works for Big Cat Country and also covers Michigan State. He told me to keep an eye on him, so he's definitely going to be someone that I look out for out of what seems to be kind of a disappointing type of running back group there for the South team. Then moving to their receivers, you've got Tyree Brady. I believe he's out of North Texas. Not exactly sure. I can't see his name on there. Travis Fulgham. I also can't see where he's from. He might be out of, it looks like TCU almost. I can't tell. I have to zoom in on the jerseys here. Jalen Hurd, who is a converted receiver, transfer student from, he is now with Baylor. Hunter Renfrow from Clemson. You got Debo Samuel out of South Carolina. David Sills, the fifth out of West Virginia. And Jalen Smith out of Louisville. Chris, I know you're a Sills fan, and this actually seems like it's going to be a fun wide receiver group. Is Sills going to be your guy here?
Yeah, I'm going to have to roll with the Brandon David Sills. He kept popping off on tape for me when I was watching Greer. Kind of led to me watching him sometimes more than Greer to see if he was going to make a play, and he did. I know Kyle likes Deebo Samuel, but also another guy is Mr. like eighth year college wide receiver Hunter Renfro. It's amazing that I'll actually see him go to the NFL because I feel like he's been in college since the Gators last won a national championship. incredibly clutch, you know, kind of the Julian Edelman, smaller guy, slot guy, but always seems to be there when you need a play, always catching the ball, probably has probably one of the better catch percentages in college, never really see him drop anything. So if you need a safety net in the slot, Hunter Renfro is definitely going to be that guy. Jalen Hurd is interesting because he was Tennessee, transferred over to Baylor, was playing really good ball over there as well. So a very intriguing wide receiver group for the 49ers and the Shanahan offense, which should be really fun to see how they're utilized. But David Sills is definitely my number one, and probably Hunter Renfro my number two.
Yeah, I am much more excited about the South wide receiver group than the North. I'm with you on Sills because I truly believe the Jaguars only need to sign one or get one more type of receiver. While they could use another possession guy because they love their possession guys, and I think Golden Tate's a good option there, their biggest need at receiver is an X, a guy that can be a possession style receiver, but more of a red zone possession guy and a guy that can win those contested catches with some sharp route running ability. But really, you want to see the guy making big plays. David Sills was all over that at West Virginia. As I watched Will Greer's tape, Sills was bouncing out, like you said, left to right. Anywhere he was lined up, he was making big plays. So he's a guy I like there. Samuel's got a ton of speed as a field stretcher. He's a guy with solid size that I think would be an interesting deep threat. As well as, you said it too, Jalen Hurd. He's going to be really fun to watch as how he's developed as a receiver after originally being a running back at Tennessee. So this isn't a natural position for him, and yet he's played himself into a Senior Bowl spot. We'll definitely be excited to watch him get out there and compete. Now we'll go ahead and take a look at the South tight ends. We've got Foster Moreau out of LSU. You got Josh Oliver out of San Jose State, and Dax Raymond out of, can't tell exactly what school he is. I think he's a smaller school. Oh, Utah State. Utah State is where he's from. And Foster Moreau is a true blocking type of tight end coming out of LSU. He's the one that's probably got the most buzz of the three. I know Josh Oliver's gotten some raving reviews, I believe, from the guys over at the Draft Network. But I'm going to stick with Moreau here simply for name recognition.
I also don't know any of these guys, but if you're saying that Moreau is a great blocking tight end, then I'm already in. You have my brand sealed right there. That's all I need to know. Blocking tight end, you can stamp it with the Misto grit stamp.
We'll move on to their offensive line. Out of Jacksonville State, BJ Autry. Out of West Virginia,
Yadni Cahoustier.
Cahoustier out of West Virginia. He's a left tackle that's getting talked into the first round at this point. Dennis Daly out of, it looks like, South Carolina. They had on authentic helmets in the picture that they used him for. Andre Dillard out of Washington State University. Titus Howard out of ASU, and I don't believe that's Arizona State. I can't tell exactly where that is. Out of Mississippi State, Elgton Jenkins. Out of Ole Miss, the lesser-known Ole Miss offensive line prospect, Javon Patterson. Out of Alabama, Ross Piersbacher. Out of Oklahoma, Ben Powers. And out of Oklahoma, Drew Samia. Drew Samia, from what I've watched of him, is that he is a nasty, nasty type of blocking right guard. Dude with a ton of power and clean feet. People have been saying it all year long that this Oklahoma offensive line, all five of them have the ability to be drafted. And Sammy is a guy that's been pointed out to me by Philip Pruss he works with us, as well as Big Cat Country, and Optimum Scouting. Sent him my way. No, okay, yeah, sure. You did it after Phil. Phil gets his credit.
When did Phil do it? I want to know. I was on this train last year.
I don't know when. You didn't last tell year. Me you were on it. You didn't tell me you were on
I
it.
I have receipts on Twitter.
I would love to see them. My second guy would probably be Ross Pierce-Bakker, because the Jaguars did go to Alabama 3 or 4 times this past year. He's a dude that I believe is their right guard. So I know he played the interior. I think he might have been able to play both guard spots, but right guard seemed to be where he played the most. So that's a guy that I bet the Jags will have their eyes on.
Yeah, well, I will definitely go with Drew Samia, because, you know, I was on that train last year. Anyway, Pierce-Bakker is another guy. Really, all the guys from OU I'm always intrigued in, because they're
that's your team.
They're a really good offensive line. But yeah, I do like Oklahoma. They are a very fun team to watch. Ben Powers. I've heard interesting things on Elkton Jenkins. It'll be interesting to watch him. But I think I'm gonna go with Drew, just because the Jaguars need a right guard. But Yadni Cahoustier is a guy that's gonna be really fun to watch as well, because he absolutely bodies people on the outside.
I believe that North as a whole has a ton of offensive talent compared to the South team. However, there are really some intriguing guys, especially from a blocking perspective, on this South team. So it seems going to be interesting to see them all when we make it down to Mobile next week. And as for now, that should just about do it here at Lockdown Jaguars. Make sure to go subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Megaphone, anywhere you can listen to podcasts. You can listen to Lockdown Jaguars. We'll catch up with you guys next week.